Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. This podcast is also proudly presented by T&K Hunting Gear. If you haven't heard about T&K, then it's about time you do, everyone. I've been using T&K gear out in the field and on hunts and have absolutely fallen in love with their stuff. T&K is veteran-owned and 100% made in America, using only American-made products. All their gear is covered under a lifetime warranty with no questions asked. If it breaks or fails, they will fix or replace it for free. T&K is your resource for bino harnesses, bow slings, and a lot more amazing gear. For more information about T&K hunting gear, go to their website at T&K hunting.com. That's T&K hunting.com. Or you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. Don't forget to leave a review from T&K and the Soulful Hunter. Freedom on and stay soulful. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. This podcast is presented by T&K Hunting Gear. If you haven't heard about T&K, make sure to go check them out, especially with the seasons fast approaching, from bow slings to harnesses to belts and all that in between. Check out T&K Hunting Gear. And today on this episode, we got a really cool one. We got Todd Bumgardner is joining us to talk about legacy, the legacy we create and the legacy that we leave behind. I got connected with Todd through a fellow friend that I met at the Western Hunting Expo that runs a podcast, Alaskan Odysseys. And we were chatting and he was like, dude, you got to talk to my buddy Todd. And so I've reached out to Todd, we connected, and it turns out he has a story that really appeals to me. And I think that a lot of adults need to hear this, because it's all about what got us into hunting, but not just that. It has to do with our fathers. And our fathers, there's a lot of people say that the downfall of America is broken homes. And there's a lot to be said towards that, whether you agree or disagree. My parents are divorced, but my parents didn't divorce until a few years ago, knowing that I also, you know, grew up in a household that was pretty confusing and pretty rough at the same time. So we're going to be diving into parenting and the role in which they play to how children turn out and live their adult life, and then the legacy that they create and leave. So Todd, thank you so much for joining us tonight, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, dude, I'm really looking forward to this as well. Todd, tell the listeners where you're from, what you do, all that, and then we'll dive in.
Yeah, man. Sure. So I'm from central Pennsylvania, about 30 miles outside of State College, where Penn State is. That's the biggest landmark. Grew up in rural Pennsylvania there, man, just hunting and fishing and playing sports. And now I live in Sterling, Virginia, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C. And so I co-own and operate a gym. I'm a strength and conditioning coach. And I also co-own and operate an education company for other personal trainers and strength conditioning coaches. I serve as a member of the performance team for a tier one tactical unit. And I run a little program called Human Predator Pack Mule that actually is, I develop training programs for other hunters.
That is so cool. It is always awesome talking to somebody who is in the mindset of creating and giving back. And, you know, whether it's a workout program or we just had Seth Adams from Peak Refuel who wanted a better backcountry food to eat. And so he developed Peak Refuel to whatever it is, man, just creating something to give back and impact people's lives and all that. So it's really awesome to hear that you're doing that.
That's crazy. I just bought one of his meals. I didn't even know. That's crazy, man.
Oh, yeah. Dude, well, you got to check out that episode. It is awesome. Personally, I can't stand how everything's like soy-based proteins.
Sure.
And either could he. And he was like, I need real meat. I'm a meat eater. And so when he created Peak Refuel, that was his goal, and to make a better, higher quality backcountry fuel and meal and all that. So, yeah. quality guy, super company out of Utah. So
awesome.
All right, so let's get into this a little bit. Legacy. Okay. We create it, we leave it, we give it to other people, other generations. You sent me an article that you wrote that, mm-hmm. What was the title of that article?
Now I'm a Hunter.
Now I'm a Hunter. I read through this and it really impacted me. And it talked about your journey as a child, growing up from being taught how to hunt from your father, or in my hands are up for all you listeners, quote unquote, learning how to hunt from your father. That without me telling all the story, why don't we dive into this? And I want you to take the listeners through your article that you wrote and how it led you to where you are today.
Yeah. So, I'll give some of the, just starting at the beginning of kind of the backstory. So I grew up in central Pennsylvania, and my dad was in the military and kind of bounced back and forth between Northern Virginia and central Pennsylvania. And that whole time, I mean, from the time I could walk, probably, like I was hunting and fishing and everything with my dad. And he was really who introduced me to the outdoors. And I just, from the time I was a kid, I loved it. Like I talk about in the essay that I sent you, we lived across from this famous ridgeline in Pennsylvania called Jack's Mountain. And every time I would walk out of our house, that's what we would see, whether I was playing in the front yard or, you know, going to play football with my buddies or whatever it was, like this ridgeline's always in view. And it just always felt like I was supposed to be there. So we would be hunting deer. We would be hunting small game. We'd be fishing for everything. Whatever it was, we would be outside. But, you know, from a young age, I also started to notice that, like, things were different about our family than other families. And, you know, my dad, I mean, I just bluntly, isn't a great guy. He's really not. I mean, he had a hard time keeping a job. The family wasn't the priority. And, it was tough on my mom. Like, my mom supported us for a long time on a minimum wage job. And, you know, I don't know. It's his way of moving through the world. I deduced at a young age, it was very different than the other fathers that I got to interact with. But it was still like one of those things where, you know, growing up, like, he's your dad and you hunt with him and you do the things that he wants to do. And you just kind of grow up along that, even though it's like, you're kind of like following along the same path, but I could feel something kind of diverging at the same time, even as probably a 10-year-old boy, like something just, it just never felt right. But, you know, he was around till I was about 15. And the same thing, like, you know, I played football. I think he hung a lot of pride. A lot of the attention I got from him was because of how good I was at sports. And there wasn't really the discipline or the real, like, love of a father that you think that, you know, boys should get. It wasn't like a guidance or anything like that. It was just like, oh, I can use my boy to get some attention. And he piled around and tried to get me to keep secrets for him and all this kind of stuff. And it was messed up, man. But there were a lot of valuable things that he did teach me about. You know, I learned how to do I had a lot of skills from a young age when it came to the outdoors. And so that was something that laid a foundation. And I did fall in love with being outside because of him. So, you know, it wasn't all bad. But when it got to be when I was about 15 and he left, you know, it was just like, of course, everything was tumultuous. Everything's turned upside down. My mom, you know, obviously she just lost her marriage. And she was trying to keep us afloat. I'm trying to go to school, figure out where things are supposed to be socially. Like, you go from things being relatively normal to being the kid that's getting free lunch now. You know what I mean? So yep. It's like, it was a pretty weird crash, man. And, so I mean, football is kind of what held me together at that point in my life. I ended up playing pretty well and through my high school career, and then ended up playing in college. But it was like I started to drift away from the identity of that I associated with my dad. And by the time I got to college, I mean, when I was like 18, 19, I kind of stopped hunting. I still fished. I still, because a couple of my buddies were really into it. So we would fish a lot. And I think I hunted small game a couple times in college. And then I hunted a little bit outside of college, but I didn't really start getting back into it until I was maybe 28, 29. And, it started out with like, I don't know, I was outside all the time. I like I said, I always fished. I loved to hike. And it really came back when I was like settling into, I think, figuring out how truly comfortable I was with who I am and what I really wanted for my life and the experiences that I wanted to have and how I wanted to live out the things that I value. So I was able to start to divert myself away from that feeling that, you know, hunting had any association with my father. So it wasn't one of those things where it was like, oh, I got that from him. I was like, no, I got to experience that because of him. But like, this is something that I love just because I love it.
Yeah.
And, so I started hunting birds and stuff with my buddy Brett, and that was like the impetus to go back down the path in full scale. And since then, it's just been really something that I started to build my life around. And it's something that I want to continue to carry forth and give to other people as much as I can. So, but I don't know. It's just one of those things where it was like, you start to settle into yourself and now it's like, it's actually something that's just for me. There's no association of that identity.
So I'm going to jump in here real quick and give some background for all my listeners who have been checking out this podcast for a while, or anyone who is new to listening to this. I think the reason why like your story appeals to me so much is because I also had to break away from my father, and I found identity through hunting, and I found my own identity in hunting. My father didn't teach me how to hunt. My father was my high school football coach. I did play college football. I returned to be his defensive coordinator, and I was going to be the next head coach at the local high school here. He's a state Hall of Fame coach. He's impacted a lot of people's lives to the point where one of my good buddies, Skyler, he says he thanks my dad personally for helping him meet his wife, which he met in college, and he played football and all this stuff. And then at the end of the day, it turns out that like my relationship with my dad isn't that good. I don't speak to my father anymore. I don't speak to my mother anymore. And I have this out there and it sucks. Like, family's awesome until it's not.
Sure. I know what you mean.
And I don't think anyone will understand that until they're in a situation in which they realize that. You know, like your friends can be family, because family is the ones that are always going to be looking out for you and putting sure. You know. So here was my story of like growing up. My dad taught me how to fish. He taught me how to backpack. He took me out in the woods. My first backpacking trip, I went, I think, 25 miles as a second or third grader on a part of the Pacific Crest Trail. Now, I loved it. It wasn't like, suck it up, kid, come with me. Like,
no, for sure.
My brother went. I was with some uncles. You know, like it hit my heart. And I was like, dude, the mountains are calling. The mountains are calling. I loved being out there. But also at the exact same time on that trip, I had something that like impacted me that has stuck with me until the very first animal I ever killed. And I remember being this little second grade boy, maybe going into the third grade, and my uncles or whoever it was pretended they were bears. To bed early. I'm in my tent and all, you know, all this stuff, which sounds fun and innocent, but to a second grade boy who didn't have any adult comfort, and it was like my first real time out in the wilderness, I was freaked out. And from that point on, I have always been afraid of bears in the woods.
Really?
Until my very first big game animal that I killed was a bear. And yeah. It's like full circle, the whole story comes back together. But you know,
you got to slay your dragon, man.
I know. And so this is like why the tagline of this podcast is transforming lives through primal adventure. Your life will be absolutely transformed the moment you face your fears, the moment you get into that area of discomfort, that unknown, and take a leap of faith, a leap of trust, and just go out there and live your life. I think this is very common with today and current affairs. Is like, we can't live in fear. We cannot let fear drive our lives.
For sure.
And when we let fear win, we lose. And we don't get to create. We don't get to enjoy. We don't get to truly live what we were meant to be, who we were meant to be, what we're meant to do. And at the ultimate, if I would have always given into my fear, I wouldn't be have created a podcast. I wouldn't be talking about mentorship as conservation. I wouldn't be out there trying to get more people involved in the outdoors and all this stuff. But it took me overcoming my fears and challenging, but also listening to my heart. I knew that when I was in second grade and I went up into the mountains, I was like, dude, this is home. So I backpacked. I used to work at REI. I loved it. Every August before football started, I was in the mountains bringing my fishing pole, my Red Ryder BB gun. I was just like, I always wanted to hunt, but I didn't know how. I didn't know how to get into it. No one ever talked to me like, hey, you look like you actually might be interested. Would you like to do this? And so my dad never hunted. So the legacy he left was that if I want to do something, go out and do it. So I'm not going to discredit my father at all because I have learned a lot from him. He also says either you're getting better or you're getting worse. And I truly believe that in life, like either you are moving forward and progressing yourself or you're not. And therefore, everyone else gets to progress past you, even if you're not personally getting worse. But if you take into the workout field, because you're a gym guy, you have instant atrophy the moment you stop working out, right? You're always in either hypertrophy or atrophy.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a consistent stimulus to make sure that you're making gains, that's for sure.
Yeah. So here we are. I'm a dude who's scared of bears. Thankful that my dad took me backpacking, but the legacy that we live, man, and the point of like this podcast is like we do not realize the ripple effect we have in this world and how powerful each and every one of us are. You know, here I am, I'm just some dude up in the Northwest FaceTiming a guy out by Washington, D.C., Virginia, East Coast, and we're talking about our dads and talking about finding ourselves. I think one of the biggest things for me is I learned how to be a man in the mountains. I grew up. I became an adult.
Yeah.
In the mountains through hunting and all that. And your article spoke to me.
Yeah. I think that's everybody has their everybody has the stone that they kind of sharpen themselves on, and I think that's it's an individual experience, man. And, you know, it comes back to, you said it's like, you killed the bear, and it comes back to what kind of dragons do you need to slay? And whether that's an experience that you had when you were younger and needed to come full circle, or whether it's like realizing that you're not something that you don't want to be associated with. And it takes time. It takes paying attention. It takes having different experiences in different contexts for you to really start to understand how you react to different things. And then you can start to settle into that person that you like to be. And then from there, it's just, this is something that either works for me or doesn't, and either feeds me or doesn't. And then from there, it's just like, you know, I'm this person, this is what I do. And you can let go of some of the baggage that a lot of people just can't. And I think having something that gives you the opportunity to show you more of who you are is important. And I think that's why, you know, the outdoors for a lot of folks is so revelatory. You know, I mean, I think that because there are certain situations where it's like, you know, you're hiking up a ridge, or you're at a somewhere you have to cross a crevice or something. It's like, well, you have to make a decision. You're either going to go up or you're not. You're either going to jump it or you're going to turn around.
Right.
And we have a lot of those situations, and it's like, you know, you kill your first animal by yourself and anybody to help. It's like, well, I got to figure out how to gut and skin this thing, you know? And there's just so many ways for you to learn and grow and have an opportunity to sharpen your skills. And I think that's what one of the things that really helps.
Man, it's so cool. You know, I always preach about on this podcast is that everyone, no matter how new at hunting you are, how long you've been doing it, everyone's an ambassador for hunting. And either you are portraying a negative aspect of hunting or a positive aspect. And tell the listeners a little bit more. Like, you left hunting because your father kind of portrayed it in a negative fashion. Would you agree? Don't want to put words in your mouth, but
no, yeah. I mean, a lot of it, yeah. There's a couple of reasons, man, and that's definitely one of them. You know, I killed my first deer when I was 7 or 8 years old, somewhere in there. And the way that it happened is I feel comfortable saying like it's not the way that it's supposed to happen. So we lived on a military base just outside of Fredericksburg, Virginia. And there's a lot of deer, so you know, we hunted a lot. We hunted a lot. And my dad had bought me a 410, a single shot, like breech action, breech loading 410 shotgun. And so, which was cool. You know, I would hunt squirrels with it with him and all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, we would do a lot of spotlighting and stuff. And we were, it was during the season, but we were spotlighting, and I don't even think we were supposed to be. And so we're driving down a back road in the base, and my dad shines a spotlight across the Bronco. We had a Ford Bronco too.
And, nice.
Yeah. And he caught the eyes of this doe, and this doe's just standing there. And so he says, roll down your window and hang your gun out. And he's like, I want you to aim for its butt and you'll hit it in the head. So I just did what I was told. And I aimed for its butt and I hit it in the head and the doe dropped right there. And that's how I killed my first deer. And, you know, you don't really get it then. You know, you're 8 years old. You're a boy. Like, you think that those are the kind of things that you're supposed to do. But that's not the first. That wasn't the last experience that I had like that. There was another experience when I was probably 12 or 13 when my dad was taking me hunting in Pennsylvania. We were driving around, you know, and we saw some deer off the side of the road. And he's like, get out, go shoot those. And I shot across the hood of his truck, and somebody had been, a guy was out, happened to be walking his dog, and like came and took my dad's license plate. And we both got in pretty big trouble for that. We got a fine, you know? So it was things like that where it was like, I have this negative association with this thing that should be really, I guess, life affirming and based on the right kind of values of self-reliance and sustenance and trying to give back and having a conservation ethic. And, you know, it was none of those things. It wasn't any of those things anymore. And growing up, and I get to the point where I have to evaluate these things and I have to run things through the filter of kind of how I see the world. And I was like, man, it just didn't fit for a little while. I was like, I think it was mostly just the identity of not wanting to be associated with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't really see hunters in that way. That wasn't it at all. Cause all my friends still hunted. Man, you grew up in central Pennsylvania. Everybody hunts. And, you know, it wasn't seeing things that way, but it was like, that was the association that I had. And I was like, well, I needed to go separate from that and kind of figure out what it meant for me. And one of the reasons that came back to me is like, man, I just, you know, like I said, I just being a part of the outside and really being a part of it. And I think the only way to be a part of that is to actually completely submerge yourself in it. And it was something that Steve Opat, that you mentioned earlier, he and I were talking about today, is like, you have to be a good hunter, you have to become part of the environment. And you can't be like the boogeyman that's walking in, you have to be a part of it. And I love that aspect. And the only way to get that is to hunt. Because otherwise you're just an observer, you're just passing through, and you're not really just a whole part of the environment.
I talk about that all the time. The participant versus the observer of nature.
Sure.
I love it.
And I think that that's a big part of it. And there's also, like, you know, as I got older, there's also a food ethic. You know, I like the fact that I can control more of where my food comes from and how it's harvested and how it's cared for. I mean, that's meaningful to me. And I also like the fact that I can not be as reliant on a system that could break as other people have to be reliant on.
Yep.
And, you know, all of those things kind of came together, and it gives me a way to live out my values as a grown man. Now that I'm in my mid 30s now, and it's like, I'll do this until I can't walk anymore. And it's just, I think the thing is no matter what it is, whether it's hunting or it's some other thing that you have some baggage with, is like, I think it's just, you have to give yourself some time and take perspective with it, because nothing is going to be permanent and you could always reevaluate it at a different time, you know?
Yeah, totally. You know, it's interesting that, so I'm a school teacher, and I always talk to my students. I'm like, listen, people are products of their environment, but their environment does not define who they are. You get to and get to, because it is something that it's a choice. You get to make your life how you want it. If you are in a dark and depressing and sad environment and state of mind and all that, then make the choice. And it starts by loving yourself so that you can believe in yourself and say, I'm worth it. I am worth a better life. I am worth loving. I am worth whatever the world has in store for me, and then go out there and get it. And I think that is going back to like your hunting thing, and you're saying is like, you were taught maybe in not the best manner, but at the end of the day, you also got to choose what type of life you wanted to live. Yeah. And you got to create the life that you wanted to live, and you're doing it, and obviously from my perspective, you're enjoying it and you're making an impact.
Yeah, for sure. That's for sure true.
And I think that is often forgotten. And this is kind of a hunting podcast, but really this podcast is more about making ourselves better people. I truly believe that it starts with your own individual, starts with me, it starts with you. And we can't love the world and we can't love other things until we love ourselves to do it correctly and wholly and wholeheartedly. So when I was reading your essay that you're talking about and that you wrote, I had this question. It was like, okay, here's this guy who had some negative experiences as a child. He left hunting and came back to it. Now you talked about this previously in our conversation where you were always seeing this ridgeline and it's something about it called to you. What was it that made you want to go back to hunting? Was it because your friends did it? So did you do it for community? Did you do it for like a call of the wild upon your soul? Did you do it because you knew that you had to like mark a box, check, like reach a certain status of self-reliance? Or what was it? Take us through.
Man, I think it's complicated. I would love to say, give you this simple answer and just say, you know what, I felt this and then I did this. You know, I there is a community aspect, being associated with some of my good buddies from back home, it's like, that's what they do. And it was something that they pulled me back into, because just watching them do it and hearing them talk about it again, and it's just like, you know what, I think I'm going to work my way back into that. And I actually got to hunt things that I didn't hunt growing up. Like in the past few years, I've gotten into hunting waterfowl, which I love. And it's not something that my dad ever taught me to do or exposed me to. We never hunted spring gobblers growing up. And I got into that in the past couple of years and have really enjoyed that. But I think there's the community aspect for sure. I think it was just there though too, man. Like, I think it was just something that was like, you know, cause I've always been one to spend time outside. Like, I've been into fly fishing off and on since I was in high school, and I really got back into that in my mid 20s. And it was almost like this is the next level of the next level. And when I say it's like, even now, it's like I love to hunt way more than I love to fish. Like, that's, I was that way as a kid.
I agree.
And I'm back to that. And the reason is because there's much more gravity, right? Cause it's like your decision can't be taken back.
Yes.
You have to think, decide, and a whole nother level of, I don't know what word I want to use. Maybe morality, maybe, skill, all those kind of things blended together. And, you know, to be a part of the thing to do, hunting was just the next natural progression to bring back into my life. And it was also, I think, one of those things where it was like, you know, when you leave the things behind, like I was trying really hard not to be something rather than just deciding to be the thing that I wanted to be. I was really trying hard not to be my dad. And I didn't need to do that because I'm not him. And I was never going to end up like him, but I was trying really hard not to be that. And when I just let myself be the thing that I am, all of that stuff just started coming back to me anyway. And with all of that, you know, the social aspect, the community, the next level in the gravity of being a part of the outdoors and how I want to live my life. And then there's also just like the sustainable food aspect. It's like, I like knowing that the way what I'm doing contributes to a more positive ecological system rather than a negative one. And also that I have control over how everything's managed. Cause like, I know a lot of guys, I don't know how it is where you are, but like, you know, there's a lot of whitetail hunters here, and they just, a lot of guys just take their deer to the processor, and I don't do that. I do everything myself. I want to see it from the beginning to the end. If I can pull the trigger, I can do everything else too. And that's kind of how I look at it. So I think it really, it's just giving me a way to live out, take my value system and apply it over something that's meaningful and construct a life around it. And I've done that with my career. And now it's like my career and like my avocation of hunting are pretty much parallel. And it just gives me a way to live out my life in a meaningful way.
That's so cool. I have been a fisherman for a long time. I do not find fishing as rewarding as hunting. And I've never heard someone say it quite like you have, but I totally get it, where fishing is not a final. There's no finality to it. You can hook a fish, you can release a fish, you can let it go, whatever. You squeeze a trigger, release an arrow, whatever it is, it's just like words. You cannot take them back.
Yeah.
The moment that goes out into the universe, it's like, you know, like the kid on A Christmas Story. But
yeah,
you know, it's like you ain't getting that back, man. You can't sure. grab that and put it back in your mouth. So the moment that you squeeze the trigger, your ripple effect is doing what it's supposed to do, but you better be ready for the repercussions of it.
Yeah, that's for sure true. I think it makes you. Now, I say this from the aspect of the way that I approach things, and that's the only way that I can speak for. And I know that some of my friends feel the same way. And I know not every hunter that I grew up with in central Pennsylvania and everything like that feels that way. Obviously, my father. There's guys that it's just tradition, and they don't put as much thought into this as I am. But it's like, I think it helps me behave in a far more examined and moral way. Mm. And because it's like, if I'm going to go make these decisions, I have to examine everything. I have to know my limits. I have to know if it's farther away than this, I can't shoot. And if this is going on, I don't make this decision. And really understanding everything about who you are, what your strong suits are, what your weaknesses are, and having to evaluate a situation to be able to put yourself in a position to be successful, but also to put yourself in a position where you don't do unnecessary harm. I think it's just really makes you consider yourself fully as a human being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. I teach health along with physical education, and I'm always talking about the different aspects of health and how there is it's okay to take you time. Like, we call it me time. I need
you
me
have
time,
to.
Whether it's like, you know, sitting and closing your eyes for 10 minutes and self-meditation or praying or reading a book or listening to music or sleeping, you know, whatever it is. Now, that can't get in the way of other priorities in your life. But a part of that is self-reflection. I'm a huge proponent, and I attribute this quote to my brother, Lucas Mack, who's a hero of mine, my bro, that inward reflection leads to outward correction. So when you're in the mountains and you have no one else to rely upon, or maybe you have your hunting partners, but you don't want to put yourself in a bad situation, you don't want to take a bad shot, you have all these things. It really makes a person inward reflect. And in society nowadays, more often than not, especially with keyboard warriors on social media and all this stuff, people just let things fly. They could care less of whether or not it hits a target, and I'm not saying an animal in a target. I'm speaking specifically like whatever their purpose is. Like, they just, it doesn't matter. Like, no, I don't have to see this person. I don't care. You know, we're not going to run in the same circles, or I can be a jerk. I can treat my wife or my kids this way. It doesn't matter. But when you actually stop and inwardly reflect, dude, you're going to be one of the most powerful people in the world, because that's when that inward reflection leads to outward correction and we start becoming a better person.
Yeah. I think the thing that helps us do that is the actual interaction with consequences. And that's something that I think that you're explaining in the whole keyboard warrior thing. And, you know, the outdoors, there is always a consequence, depending on how severe or how benign it might be, but there's always a consequence. And you can either learn from that or you can avoid the outdoors. And I think that that's one of the things that's like, you either fall in love with it because you like that feeling, because it makes you feel as though, you know, you are alive and there's instant meaning because of the things that you're doing, you know, or you shy away from it because this is difficult. And I think that's the game. I think it's just really, you get to feel alive because the consequences are far more real.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason why it electrifies your soul. It shoots through your bones. I totally dig it, man. This is huge. First of all, I want to thank you for being vulnerable enough to talk about the past. You know, sure, so man. Often in this world, the past is what holds people back. They don't know how to overcome, and they get stuck in this woe is me attitude lifestyle. Coming from a broken home sucks. And I don't even know exactly what your personal experiences with your father and your mother and all that. I know mine, and my household was confusing. I had a hard time finding identity. I was afraid of my own voice and speaking up and taking action for fear of repercussion in my life. And so people are held back so much in this life. And the whole point is live the best life you can. And if you want to be a hunter and be the best hunter you can be. But remember that everything we do it for to give to others, right? Whether it's just giving to meat or given through teaching others or just giving back, because it's a circle of life. I just want to thank you so much for being vulnerable and hopping on this podcast and talking about these things. It's not easy. At least it's something that I'm overcoming as an adult currently.
Sure. No, I think the thing is, man, is like I starting from about, I don't know, I think age 18 when I really left home and went to college and played football, and you start to get more input about who you are, because right, it's like we outsource that to other people, and that's how we learn. And you know, you start to see yourself in a different context, other than the context of just being someone's son or just being somebody's little brother. You just get to see yourself in a different context, and from there, it just opens you up to different amounts of work that you can do to pay attention to kind of form and shape who you want to be. And it's, I mean, obviously I'm not done. I don't think anybody ever is, but it's taken a lot of work to get to this point. If it's like, you know, you can hear a 34-year-old man sit on a podcast and talk about some of the shit that he's been through and how he's fixed it, and it'll help you feel a little bit better about approaching it yourself, because it's a lot of work, then I'm happy to do that.
That's cool. I dig it, man. I appreciate it. You know, so what position did you play in football?
I was a safety in college. In high school, I played linebacker and quarterback.
See, there you go. So I played college football. I was a quarterback. My identity was, I'm Johnny Mack, the quarterback from Kamiak. Like, that was how I always had to introduce myself, whether when I was on recruiting trips, but then when I had new recruits coming into our college and taking them around. And my identity was football, and it was all I knew growing up from my father, and like, sports was king. And the ability to find identity in life for myself and purpose and passion through that, just, dude, like a garden that got water and nutrients for the very first time and sunshine, it just like sprouted up.
Great, man.
It was freaking awesome.
I'm happy to hear that. Do you still watch football?
I'll tell you what. Without getting too political, I am not going to be watching football this year.
Well, I mean, up until now, did you watch football?
You know, kind of. I fell out of love with sports, realizing that so much emphasis is put on something that lasts such a short time in life.
Sure.
You know, you got these kids that they're like, well, I'm gonna play football or baseball or basketball, and I coached all the sports, and I had experience with these people, and it's like, okay, so after that, then what?
You know,
the median age of a professional athlete's like 24, 23 years old. at that point, you still might not even know who you are. So what are you going to do with the rest of your life?
Oh, for sure.
If you even make it to that point.
Yeah, which is nearly impossible. I was just curious because it's I couldn't tell you last time I sat down and watched a football game. I literally don't care. It's because people always ask me because they know I played college football and stuff. Like, well, you going to watch the game this weekend or did you see this? And I was like, oh, no, I was doing X, Y, or Z. And they're like, you don't watch football anymore? I was like, man, I spent so much of my life on football between playing, going to meetings, watching it, watching film, doing all this stuff. It's like, I can't give it any more of my life. There's so much more to do. Why would I do that again? You know what I mean?
Dude, I totally get it. There was a 1 year before I started hunting, whereas it was the year previous to the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. So being a Washington guy, you know, obviously a Seahawks fan, or yeah, I'll leave it there. But I remember like if they lost on a Sunday, I was just like in a pissy mood. And I'm like, why am I giving my power away to something that is totally meaningless and irrelevant to my life?
Sure.
And so I really got to evaluate and be like, you know what? I don't need this.
There you go.
I'll watch it with friends because it's, you know, a social thing to do. But at the end of the day, I stopped playing fantasy football, fantasy sports. I just, you know, if my kids want to play sports, awesome. I'll coach them. I'll have fun. But, dude, life skills, that's what it's all about. I'm a proponent of things that can help you achieve a high success in life that don't just limit your identity to a youthful stage.
For sure, man. I hear that.
Yeah. So what is it like being a whitetail hunter on the East Coast and talking to somebody on the West Coast? And have you ever come out West hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I have. I've been to Alaska and I've been to Wyoming to hunt. I mean, I'm envious of you guys. I mean, I'm envious and I'm not envious. So the reason that I say that I'm not is because even though there's not as much land access maybe that we have here, like you have to get a lot more permission from private land. There's not as much public land. There's still in ways more opportunity. So like, for example, in the state of Virginia, you get 6 deer tags a year.
Holy and in the smokes. County.
Yeah. And in the county that I live in, you actually have unlimited deer tags because of the deer population. So I could hunt from September 1st until the end of April of the next year. I don't, I'm usually done by December. I usually kill about 3 deer a year. And then kind of call it on that. But you know, so there's part of me that I'm like, well, I have it pretty good, quite honestly, between hunting in Pennsylvania and hunting in Virginia. But I mean, you guys got cool stuff out there. Like I went to Wyoming to hunt pronghorns last year and that was amazing. I got to kill a decent buck. You know, you guys have elk, you have mule deer, you have all these cool things. So there's that part of envy that I have, which I'll always come west to hunt those things. But there's just like, man, it's like, there's a lot of opportunity right around me here that I'm pretty grateful for too.
Dude, that is incredible. 6 deer a year. And in your county, the only thing you can shoot nonstop up here in the state of Washington is coyotes. Like,
yeah,
you can hunt those year round. No quota. Just like go get after them. We are allowed 1 deer a year. We can shoot 1 elk a year. And they just recently, I think, 2 years ago passed, we can shoot 2 black bears a year, which a lot of people don't hunt black bear because they feel uncomfortable with that. And they also don't like the whole predator concept.
Yeah, it is tough for folks.
I'm eating black bear for dinner tonight. My spring bear that I just shot a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's great.
We're having, what is it? Taco salads, a little bear taco salad. So, but yeah, so here it is. You're living life, man. You got it going.
Yeah, I'm thankful, man. I got a pretty good gig. I get to hunt whenever I want. I have great businesses that support the lifestyle that I want to live. I don't really have much to complain about, that's for sure.
Yeah. One question I love to ask all my guests on the podcast is, what has hunting done for you? What has it done for your soul? What has it done for, man, you could take it any which way. And you kind of have already answered this through our conversation, but like, Can you really put your thumb on it?
I would say the one word that comes to mind is connection. And when I say connection, I mean that in several different ways. So like we talked about, connection to my friends, it's helped me connect with more people and grow my friendships and meet so many more people and connect with people that I've literally been friends with since I was a kid at a deeper level. It's helped me connect with myself even more through having the experiences that I've had, connecting with, the natural world more because of how much time I spend in it. And I get to connect with new places because of the opportunities that I get to travel and hunt and do all of that. And like, you know, in 2 weeks I'll be in Alaska to hunt caribou and I'll get to see a whole nother part of the world and connect with new people and reconnect with a good buddy of mine, Steve. So I would say that is probably the biggest thing it's done for me.
Man, that's so cool. I love hearing that. So, okay, you are a personal trainer. You specifically create training workouts for hunters. Here you are being an East Coast whitetail guy. You're heading to Alaska. What type of exercises have you been doing or what type of plan have you been going through preparing for that?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing that guys do is they do a few things. They wait till too close to time and they try to prepare too fast. And they think that they need more high intensity exercise than they really need. So really what over the past couple of years since I've started traveling west to hunt is I've developed a really powerful aerobic base while also staying really strong. So a lot of my training is based on maintaining the strength that I've gained over the years while continuing to build my aerobic base and then training specifically for whatever kind of terrain that I'm going to be on, whether that's going up ridges and mountains or whether it's just going to be a lot of miles across the tundra. That's really it. It's like my focus on human predator pack mule is really focusing on the three elements that we need to be successful as hunters physically at the base level, physically, like the human level is, you know, do you have healthy joints? Are you conditioned the way that you need to be? Do you have the base level of strength? And then predator is like, can you move smoothly and with enough control to be quiet and move slow and put yourself in the position to kill and get the shots that you want to take? And then the pack mule is just a tough ass, like, you got to get it done. Like, you have to grit through some stuff. And it's that aspect of training and also that aspect of the hunt, you know? So those are the three elements that I combine in my training for myself and for all my clients.
That's cool. I love lifting weights to an extent. I think it, for me personally, it takes a lot of time to lift weights to the way I want to. Being a former football player, you know, like you spend an hour and a half, 2 hours in the weight room, just slamming iron. I found that I accomplish a lot more exercising when I'm running because I get to challenge my mind as well. Like for the suck fest of packing out or hiking in or going over next ridges. But I also know that also gives me shortcomings when I'm in the mountains because it doesn't train with like a pack on my back and the heavy weight and the inclines and all that stuff. So do you you focus more on like total body endurance or muscle building, or is it just kind of that hybrid of everything?
I mean, it's everything. I mean, it depends on the time of year too. You know, if the farther that you out, it's like after the season, you know, you're going to be depleted. You're going to be a little run down. So that's the time to kind of recover and then put some muscle back on. And then as you get into the beginning of the next year, it's really time to start to work on the base level of conditioning while you're also building and maintaining your strength and your athleticism. And then as you get closer to the season, it's just like continuing to expand your aerobic base like and your conditioning and then getting as specific as you can for the hunt. So it takes all of those elements. They have to be present at the same within the program throughout the year. It's just your proportions will change. Like you'll be like, you know, in November when I'm done traveling to hunt, when I get back from Wyoming, a lot of my training will be very strength based to put back on some of the muscle that I've lost to regain some of the strength lost from just going and tearing my body down. And then as I go through into December, I'll start to put miles on my body again. I'll start hiking and walking. I'll build into rucking and start to build my aerobic base. So that way, you know, I'll likely go back to Alaska to hunt moose next September. So by the time I get there, I've kind of stayed in a decent level of shape, and then I'm specifically prepared for whatever that moose hunt is going to ask for me.
I like it. I think a lot of people, they yo-yo too much, right? Just like how they diet. They want to go healthy eating, horrible eating, healthy eating, horrible eating, rather than just like maintaining. And it's a lot easier to maintain than it is to recover.
Consistency is the key to just about everything. You got to keep showing up.
Yep. I love it. What words of advice do you have for anyone that is hunting, whether they are new or old? What does Todd Bumgardner stand upon that he wants to share with everyone?
I would say, you know, I'll come back to the word connection, just connect. Like, I think one of the things that don't do well enough sometimes is taking time to appreciate that you're in the present moment that you're in, and connecting with that, and connecting with the animals that you're hunting, and understanding, connecting with the people that you're hunting with, and all of those, and all of the aspects of it. And I'll say, you know, I'll tell you a short vignette from Wyoming last year. You know, my buddy Christian and I, we drove from Pennsylvania to Wyoming in 24 hours, and we just slept in the truck and just shifted off and on, and we drove straight through, and we got to Laramie, Wyoming, at about noon of the next day. So we pick up our buddy and we head straight out to the HMA that we're going to be hunting. And, you know, we'd never hunted pronghorns before. We're just trying to figure stuff out. So we're walking around and, you know, we all kind of go our separate ways to try to get the lay of the land. And, you know, as it's starting to get dusk, the sun starts to go down over this peak that's a little farther away from Laramie towards the west called Elk Mountain. And, you know, I'm standing there with my buddy Christian and I'm looking at it. And I'm watching the sunset behind this. And of course, there's always the pinks and the oranges and the reds and these beautiful colors. And I'm like, that was worth the drive by itself. And Christian turns and looks and he just nods and didn't even have to say anything. It was like, it all made sense right then. So I would say, you know, take the time to just connect with whatever it is that you're doing.
That's beautiful. I love that. I love that. Todd, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being a guest here on the Soulful Hunter podcast. Can you leave the listeners with your social media or how to get a hold of you if they have questions, or specifically, you know, how to get involved with Human Predator Pack Mule?
Yeah, sure. So the easiest Instagram handle to find me at is just @bumtodd. And you can shoot me an email at humanpredatorpackmule@gmail.com. And I'm happy to answer any and all questions.
Perfect. I love it. What plans you got for this fall as far as hunting? I hear that you're going up to Alaska for caribou. There you go. Thank you. So you're going up for a caribou. What else you got going on?
So caribou, September, I'll be back home here on the East Coast, and I'll likely spend a lot of time in Pennsylvania hunting geese and doves and stuff. October, I'm heading back to Wyoming to hunt elk, and then I'll spend the rest of the fall hunting deer and ducks and geese here on the East Coast.
Wow, that's cool. I love it, man. Dude, thank you so much for joining us. Listeners, go check out Todd, everything that he has to offer. He's an awesome dude, an amazing story, and a great individual. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good one. Everybody, don't forget, freedom on and stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast, as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.